We're excited to be here. My name is Eric Tooley. I'm the men's ministry leader of Celebrate Recovery.
And I am Angela Tooley, the ministry leader of Celebrate Recovery here at Richardson East.
My connection here to Richardson East, believe it or not, began 42 years ago. I said that out loud, didn't I? Anyway, somebody by the name of Jim Deans drove a big bus into our neighborhood and picked up kids and brought them to church, and I was one of those kids. I came to Sunday school, and it was taught by somebody named Max Myers. Within a little bit, I was going to a huddle group, which I understand they're called rock groups now or something like that, and my huddle group leaders were somebody named Bill and Margie Bunch. Bill also took my senior pictures when I graduated from high school. Margie, up and even until this year, would grab me walking as I walked through the lobby and introduce me to whoever she was talking to and talk about this teenager who sat at her dining room table. And I was like, oh, great. And I said, yes, that was me. No, that can't be. But anyway, but they were very, very special people. And Bill's funeral yesterday was something very, very special indeed.
And my connection goes back even further. When my parents, Gerald and Mary Harris, placed membership here when I was in second grade, actually in that old building down on Plano Road that I affectionately called the Ark due to its vast and cavernous auditorium, which you could hide in for days, my childhood memories go back to Pearl Wiley, Jean Allred, Laverne Dent, Greta Maddox, Doris James, Rosemary Collins, and Rachel Everett, to name a few great ladies who have already gone home.
To put things in perspective, you know Ed Eason is one of our elders, or maybe you know him as one of our ministers, or maybe you know him as one who works at City Square. Well, I knew Ed Eason as a chemistry teacher and a football coach at Bertner High School. Ed was my football coach, and due to Ed's excellent coaching and my amazing athletic ability, you weren't supposed to laugh yet then, but anyway, I want you to know that the Bertner High School football team did not win a single game. You guys think I'm making this up. This is true. Our best opportunity was our homecoming game. We were playing J.J. Pierce. They had not won a game either. And you're thinking, something's going to give here, right? Apparently not. The game ended in a 0-0 tie.
I was at that game, too. I was a proud member of the mighty Ram Marching Band. In the band widely known as the Class of the Class. And we did our very best to be supportive of our football team. However, we would be severely chastised in the days to come when footage aired on the Channel 8 News of the band chanting, 2-4-6-8, score before we graduate.
Yeah, those were some fun times indeed. 35 years ago, almost to the day, a preacher by the name of Larry James asked the youth minister intern of the Richardson East Church of Christ to present the Sunday morning sermon. Well, I was that intern and presented my first sermon ever. So it's very honoring to me to get to return and be with you guys this morning. Today, let's go next slide. Vigo did an excellent job last week of talking about the final beatitude. When focusing on persecution, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, based on Matthew chapter 5 and verse 10.
And today we want to focus on that same verse, but we want to look at it in a broader way. We want to focus on righteousness.
Next slide.
And we like the Good News translation. Happy are those who are persecuted because they do what God requires.
We believe that we make choices to do what God requires. Each one of the Beatitudes is a choice, and they are healing choices. Next slide, please. Too many times, we don't make those healing choices that God wants us to make, to do the things that God requires. Things like confessing our sins one to another. Things like sharing Christ with others. Things like sacrificially giving. We don't make the choice to live authentic Christian lives. We present things on Facebook or Instagram of how we want people to think of us, but that's not really truly who we are. Now, why don't we make those healing choices? Why don't we do those things that God requires? Well, I believe it's because of our fear of persecution. When I say the word persecution here, I don't want to equate the things that we go through in our lives with the martyrs of the Bible or those who are even arrested for being a Christian. But persecution in our own lives. Are you afraid of losing your job? Are you afraid of making your spouse upset or even your spouse leaving you? Are you afraid that your friends would think less of you? Or maybe your church would. You wouldn't get to do the ministry or the leadership at church that you'd like to do. Those are the kind of things we fear. And that keeps us from making the choice of doing what God requires.
This morning, we're going to share our story of how we have not made righteous choices, the problems that that has caused, but that when we made a choice of taking a journey, we found healing, we've had blessings and happiness, and we are indeed happy. We have given this testimony on a couple of occasions at other churches and at a conference in Orlando last month. And those people, they didn't know us, and we most likely won't see them again. But that's not the case today. This is home. You are family to us. And we are a little bit nervous. So, as is our custom, we will be reading our testimony because one of us gets emotional. So thank you for allowing us to read our testimony and for letting us share.
My name is Eric Tooley, but that's just my name. That's not my identity. I'm a minister and a counselor and a public speaker, but that's just my career. That's not my identity either. I'm a son, a brother, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and a dog owner. But that's just my family. That's not my identity either. I struggle with pornography and overeating. And for a long time, I really thought that was my true identity. And I tried to keep that secret as long as I could. But I have learned that those are just my struggles. That's not my identity either. My identity is a child of the one true King, Jesus Christ. This is my story of how I figured that out. My life literally started with a bang. On the day I was born, President John F. Kennedy set a naval blockade of Cuba. Historians consider that day the closest that the USA and the Soviet Union ever came to nuclear war. Thank God that bang never happened, so that's not the bang I mean. 13 months after I was born, on a beautiful November day, my mother walked me 2 blocks from our apartment. The crowd was light, and my mother swears that President John F. Kennedy and his wife Jacqueline smiled and waved directly at us as their motorcade passed by. Exactly 18 minutes later, 3 bangs went off and President Kennedy was assassinated. That's not the bang I mean either. On February 21st, 1965, my parents and I were hit head-on by a teenage drunk driver. Next slide, please. This was our car. This bang would indeed affect the rest of my life. My mother broke her back and her leg. My father and I were not even expected to live through the night. The same surgeon who 15 months earlier was trying to save President Kennedy's life was now removing metal splinters from my father's brain. In the days before child car seats, I was sitting in my mother's lap. Next slide, please. My face hit the steel dashboard and knocked out my front four teeth. By the grace of God, I went under the dashboard instead of over it. The dashboard scraped off most of my scalp. Later, it would be determined that I had damage to my pituitary gland. This would result in water diabetes, epilepsy, thyroid issues, and major dental issues that I have to this day. My father also survived. Doctors said, however, that he would be a vegetable, that he would never walk again or have a diminished IQ. Well, 10 years later, he would walk across the stage of Southern Methodist University and receive his master's degree in computer science. I'm very proud of my dad. I loved him dearly. I know he loved me, and I miss him after his death 8 years ago.
Church was at the center of our family life. Dad was a deacon. Mom was busy with church ministries, and we were at church almost always when the doors were open. Growing up, I never wanted to displease my parents, and I did not ever want to do anything that might get me in trouble. I did well in school, and I was very active in all the church youth activities. So as we've said, Eric and I went to the same church and the same school. We were both very involved in the church youth group. We spent a lot of time together, so much so that we were best friends, yet we never dated. But we did double date a lot. And I've always told everyone that he dated everybody but me. I had a strong faith, but it also had never been tested. And by the time I reached high school, I had developed a little curiosity about how the rest of the world lived. This began a life where I started making boxes, only showing who I wanted to be to whoever was in front of me, a loving, respectful daughter, a nice Christian girl who hoped good deeds and church attendance would be enough to cover for all the things she didn't understand about God, or the witty and all too often foul-mouthed kid who wanted to be popular with her fans, with her friends in band and at her work. I became very good at being who I wanted to be for whatever situation I was in. I managed my life very well this way, never seeming to slip up. I was a class year ahead of Eric. I went off to Abilene Christian University. When Eric graduated, he went off to Oklahoma Christian University. We kept up with each other for a while. Eric married while in school and became a youth minister and a dad. I graduated from ACU, returned to Dallas, and started working in ice rink management of all places. Eric worked in Oklahoma and New Orleans before coming back to Dallas as a youth minister at the Webb Chapel Church of Christ. It seemed I would see him and his family every couple of years, and it was always good to visit. I kept on working in the ice rink business, and before I knew it, I had become career girl. I had an interesting career, and it eventually took me from Dallas to Southern California to Houston and then to Columbus, Ohio. Most of the time, my work was fun, and it seemed like there was hardly ever a dull moment in my day. And eventually, my career would give me a lifetime of quirky stories.
My family didn't go to church. My parents drank, they smoked, they cursed. They had parties with their friends on Friday nights. I didn't get much attention and was often the target of my dad's humor. A friend gave my dad a subscription to Playboy magazine as a graduation gift. My mom actually loved telling everyone that he had this subscription because she thought it made her a liberated and secure woman. She also liked romance novels and erotica books. However, my mother and grandfather would also read me Bible stories, and I loved them. I couldn't get enough of them. I went to vacation Bible schools with my friends and visited churches when I spent the night with my friends. In junior high, I began to develop two lives. In my public life, I started going to church right here at Richardson East. became a very dedicated Christian who genuinely loved Jesus. I tried to be perfect so my dad couldn't make fun of me. It wasn't good enough for me just to get straight A's. I had to be the top student in my class. I was the best player, the captain of all my sports teams. I would get attention by being impressive. I even fantasized about other people. They were just in awe of me and my abilities. You guys are laughing at that, too. My other life was the secret one. To cope with my inability to be perfect, I found my dad's pornography and my mom's erotica, and I started having sex with my teenage girlfriends. That made the loneliness, the fear, the anxiety feel better, at least for a moment. Next slide, please. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 9 says, if you cannot restrain your desires, go ahead and marry. It's better to marry than to burn with passion. Well, I knew this verse was talking about me. Marriage, that's my answer. That would solve my problem of these two lives. So I got married at the age of 19. Ah, marriage. Finally, I had someone who would love me forever, eliminate my craving for pornography. Not so much. Shortly after my daughter was born, my wife told me she didn't want to have sex with me anymore. Ever. My wife's rejection became a huge justification and an excuse for my pornography. The impossible demands of impressing everyone in my roles as husband, father, and especially youth minister made me feel inadequate, and I returned to porn. Once I even closed the blinds in my youth ministry office and locked the door so I could indulge in pornography there. I was a youth minister by day, pornography addict by night. I hated it. I can't tell you how many times I promised to God that I would quit, but I kept returning to pornography. Sometimes I would go months without using and think I was finally over it, but then I would return for a few days and then quit for another period of months. But each time I returned, the porn got a little bit worse. When my daughter was just entering puberty, the father of one of her friends caused me some red flags. I remember telling her mom, I have a bad feeling about him. I don't want him anywhere near our daughter. A month or so later, I was succumbing to pornography again. And this time I went to the curtained area in the back of a local video rental store to get an X-rated video. I stepped in and instantly looked around. I always did this to see if there was anyone there who might know me. Well, this time, I saw that guy that I didn't want anywhere near my daughter. My first thought was, I was right. I knew that guy wasn't safe. Then I looked down at my feet so my face wouldn't be seen by anybody else in there. I saw my feet on the carpet. It was the same carpet that guy was standing on. Then I realized that I also was that guy. I went to my car and cried. I prayed to God for forgiveness. I promised never to do pornography again, but I would eventually do it again. I eventually left youth ministry and started speaking for a nonprofit ministry. They did sexual abstinence programs, of all things, in public schools. Does God have a sense of humor or what? My marriage continued to deteriorate. One day while I was speaking in a school in Houston, my wife called me and said she was suicidal. She was checking into a mental hospital. I came home that night and discovered my wife, who, remember, would not have sex with me, was going to pornographic websites. She had evolved to going to sexual chat rooms and then developed an online relationship with a guy in Iowa. They were sending flowers and cards to each other, having private sexual chats, exchanging sexual emails, and even having phone sex. My rejection hit an all-time high when I realized, well, she would be sexual with other men, just not me. We made an attempt to get past it, but she told me she wanted to pursue a relationship with the other man. After 17 years of marriage, she divorced me and took custody of my teenage daughter. I was 37 years old and living with my parents again. Did this finally get me to turn from porn forever? No. The pain, the rejection, the loneliness, they were intense. Pornography was my way to cope. After my divorce, I mourned. Then I decided I wanted to start dating again. I prayed, God, this time I want to do it your way. I want to be friends with someone and then be romantic and then get married and then be sexual. Well, I instantly thought of my best friend in high school, Angela. We had gone to church together, done mission trips together, backpacked in Colorado together, and a lot of stuff that good friends do. But as she mentioned, we had never dated. I found Angela living in Columbus, Ohio, and she had never married.
I went to the mailbox one day in May of 2000. I didn't like going to the mailbox very often because it was usually just bills and junk mail. This time it was a lot of bills and a letter from Eric Tooley. The letter said he was looking for me and gave particular information so that I knew it really was him. Very short and simple. And then he said, I hope it's you. I waited about 2.5 seconds before I called. Our first conversation lasted about 3 hours, and during that conversation, he told me about the end of his marriage. It had not survived his wife's online affair. Eric told me how he had grieved and now was ready to move on. Well, after that, we talked a lot, started the long-distance relationship thing. I relocated, and we were married all within 18 months. And now, before I know it, our anniversary this October will be our 15th. And his letter is framed and hangs in our bedroom. Eric often laments that he wasn't trying to be romantic and does not know how to top that. I tell him, that's okay, you should just keep trying.
I proposed a year after we started dating and we got married 6 months later. Next slide, please. We had sex for the first time on our honeymoon, and finally I was doing this thing right. I was excelling at my job about speaking about sexual abstinence. I had grown our speaking demand from 200 presentations a year when I started to over 2,000 a year. I had a boss, though, that couldn't be pleased. My attempts to impress her kept failing, and after 13 years, she fired me. I was crushed. And even though Angela was everything a wife should be sexually, when this stress hit, I went back to pornography again. After getting fired, every job opportunity dried up. It became clear that God wanted me to start my own nonprofit ministry, teaching sexual abstinence, but also about sexual addiction. God just simply wasn't going to let me run away from this issue. Then came the day that I told Angela about my porn struggle. Looking back, I'm still not even sure how that even happened. It was like I believed I had already told her. In shock, she asked if pornography had been since our marriage. I said yes. She already knew this, right? No, she didn't. And that was a very tough day. Now this porn problem was hurting the person I loved more than anyone else.
We had been married a few years. Everything, our jobs, church, family, everything seemed okay at the time. But one day, Eric came to me and told me about his long history with pornography. And then the realization that this had happened in our marriage. I don't think I'll ever forget what that felt like. The shock, the hurt, and then the anger. Against him and against this insidious intruder in our marriage. And if I could have somehow gone to one place and blown up the internet, I would have. My husband that I waited 39 years for, my Christian husband, had a porn problem, and this was not what I signed up for. I was mad, really mad. I could not believe or accept that someone who had been hurt by infidelity like Eric had could then do that to me. He felt terrible about all of this, I knew that, but I think he was hoping I would process all my feelings in a nice, timely fashion. Not so much. I stumbled along in a fog for days. I didn't know how to get through this. Bit by bit, I came out of the fog, but I never resolved the feelings of hurt and anger. I put those feelings away in a box so that no one else would ever have to know what happened. And in another box, I stuffed in fear. Okay, pornography had happened, but was it going to happen again? Or if that happened, couldn't there be something worse still to discover? During the next couple of years, I put on a brave, happy front, and we moved along in our new normal. We were coping, but just under the surface, and I mean just under the very most top layer, were raw nerves and ugly scars of hurt and betrayal. Pornography in our marriage felt like a bomb had gone off in my life. I felt shell-shocked in a marriage that had seemed so wonderful and secure was looking like a devastated battlefield. I didn't recognize my life anymore. My heart was hardening, and I needed hope and I needed help.
By this time, I had been doing presentations on pornography, and I actually told my story in my presentations. Just being public with this struggle had taken much of its power away, but the battle had still not been won. On February 28, 2013, I walked in to celebrate recovery for the first time. I was going for all the wrong reasons. I wanted to add recovery groups to my nonprofit ministry. I wanted to start Celebrate Recovery here at Richardson East. I wanted experience for my master's degree in counseling. And I would use my previous struggle with pornography as my issue. And then I was able to convince Angela to start coming as well. The Celebrate Recovery ministry leader said, "We'd love to have you." And perfect timing, because we have some step studies starting soon. Well, starting soon wasn't for 7 more months. And then Angela did start her step study, and now I couldn't. My class for my master's degree was on step study night. I was very frustrated. I fell into a depression at that time, and my previous struggle of pornography became current again. And so 14 months after my first Celebrate Recovery, I finally began my step study. Well, God's timing is perfect. And now I was entering a step study, not to enhance my ministry or to prepare to start leading Celebrate Recovery or even for counseling experience. I was starting because I needed it. And I see how that those delays were about God preparing my heart so he could do the work that he needed to do. Step one of the 12 steps is admitting I was powerless. This was so difficult for me. I remember actually saying out loud to my group, "Wait, I'm not powerless though. I can do this. I have stopped this before. I can stop again. I'll just need to work harder." Then a line in the Celebrate Recovery material hit me between the eyes. "You will know that you can't fix your problem yourself, because after all this time and after all your attempts, you still have your problem." That started me on the road to recovery.
Someone had recommended something called Celebrate Recovery, or CR, to Eric, because it would be helpful to him in his recovery from porn and helpful as he pursues his counseling degree. When Eric began attending CR, I was supportive. By this time, I had learned a few things about pornography, namely that it was an addiction, and I knew Eric was doing everything he could to avoid it. Well, after a couple of weekly meetings, he came home and announced that this was indeed very helpful to his recovery from pornography and that it would be helpful to me. Well, of course, if he'd take care of his porn issue, then yes, everything would be better for me. So not quite kicking and screaming, I went to my first meeting in March 2013. I may have needed recovery, but I sure was reluctant to share anything those first few weeks. I saw lots of people hurting in ways I never could have imagined. There were struggles of anger, pride, shame, codependency, food issues, abuses of all kinds, trauma, grief, fractured relationships, chronic illnesses, and struggles with chemical addictions. There are still more issues I could name, but I saw people who shared their joy and victories over hurts, habits, and hang-ups. I saw people whose greatest desire was to serve and praise God while they worked to overcome the issues that keep us from living the life that God has intended for each one of us. It took a little time for me to relate, but I realized that this was the place to start getting rid of that anger and fear that were always just below the surface. As I worked through the program, I discovered deeper issues I had, not only with anger, but with resentments and pride as well. And as I worked on these issues, I felt my heart softening. I felt healing and grace and a willingness to forgive. Best of all was my deepened relationship with the Lord. As Eric went through this as well, we have seen each other transform. And as we have seen God's grace to us, we also give grace to each other. And Eric and I love this ministry of Celebrate Recovery so much that we launched a group here last year. And I know being able to do that comes from God, because I never could have let myself be used this way in ministry before I came to CR. I do have moments of uncertainty and being uncomfortable. I take inspiration from Isaiah chapter 30. It speaks of the Lord's gracious compassion to us when we cry out for help. And verse 21 assures me of his faithful guidance. If you wander off the road to the right or the left, you will hear his voice behind you saying, "Here is the road, follow it." Following God's call has led us to another ministry in addition to leading CR here. We have been blessed with the ministry that we call Noble Choices. And through Noble Choices, we help equip people to see their life choices and then to empower them to choose the things which will bring the highest quality of life. Eric speaks to students, parents, schools, churches, whoever will have him, about sexual addiction, about pornography, and he tells his story. He also counsels extensively with individuals and couples who are dealing with sexual addiction issues. And of course, I do fully believe that this is a noble task, but it does present me awkward social situations from time to time. I am meeting someone new, we are getting to know each other, and then comes the question, "What does your husband do for a living?" Do you have any idea how much I want to say that he is an accountant? Not that he talks about his porn problem. But it is one of my joys to be able to laugh about that now, and it is a joy to say that I am transitioning to join the work of Noble Choices full-time. I am developing programs called Noble Women as a way to minister to women who need healing like I did. And it is one of my great joys that I can share my story and our healing journey without fear and shame. Instead of telling those quirky ice rink stories, I am excited that I can tell stories about hope and victory.
Next slide. I had discovered that my relationship with God was a codependent one. I was trying to win his approval and impress him. As we began our work on step 4, which is our personal inventories, Richardson East sent Angela and I to attend the Celebrate Recovery Summit in preparation for starting Celebrate Recovery here. At the final worship service of the summit, it all hit home to me. In tears, I wrote the following words on a 3x5 card. "I hurt from a father who made fun of me and expected perfection. He belittled me and my calling to become a minister. I have lived my life trying to prove him wrong. I have cared more about what others think of me instead of what God thinks of me. I took a nail and hammered this card to the cross." Angela said, "Wow, you just completed step 5. I was shocked. This was step 5? I mean, this had nothing to do with pornography. Well, apparently God was interested more in the deeper issues of my heart. Today, I'm almost 2.5 years sober from pornography. I literally have very little desire for it. Angela and I have experienced an amazing sexual renewal in our relationship, and our marriage is far beyond anything I ever even thought marriage could be. In 3 weeks, I will have a master's degree in counseling." With a partnership with the Marriage Place and Kim Bowen, I literally have clients all over the world I get to work with. In Australia, Vietnam, Finland, Canada, Oregon, California, Boston, New York, and Florida, just to name a few. God is using this struggle to help other people. Am I healed now? No. I have to fight this battle every day. But the pressure's off. God isn't expecting me to be perfect. He is already impressed with me. He already loves me to the max. there's nothing more for me to earn from him because he's already given everything to me. Next slide, please. I may finally understand Ephesians chapter 2, verses 8 and 9 now. It is by God's grace that you have been saved through faith. It's not the result of your own efforts, but God's gift, so that no one can boast about it. At the time I finished my step study, Mercy Me released a new CD. A song fit my transformation perfectly. The song is called Wishful Thinking. Next slide. The chorus of this song says, "Now that I know, on my worst day, the way you love me ain't never gonna change. It's never really been about what I do, but what you did. And this ain't even wishful thinking. It's just how it is."
As we close our time this morning, we want to invite you to be part of the Celebrate Recovery Ministry. We meet at 6:45 Wednesday nights upstairs in rooms 206 and 207. God has done some amazing things in this ministry in the nearly 18 months that we've been meeting. 60% or more of our attendees are not Richardson East members. We are so excited and blessed for the work that's going on. The first hour is a worship service, and if that's all that you come to, then that is a great encouragement for all of us. It's incredibly difficult to come when you're struggling to come that first time. So we ask that you come and that you bring friends. The second hour is called Open Share, where we divide by gender, and it's our time to share if we wish. It's not required, but you'd be surprised how helpful it is when you do share. And the priority of each and every Celebrate Recovery meeting is to provide a safe and confidential environment.
We also want to make you aware of another opportunity that we're going to start up on Sunday, August the 21st at 3 o'clock p.m., and we're going to do this on Sunday afternoons, and we're going to do a Bible study of the Beatitudes that we've been going through. You've heard us talk today about how each one of them is a healing choice that we can make in our lives. So the name of the study is called Life's Healing Choices. And if you're interested in knowing more and how this works, come to the Bible study. It's 8 weeks, 1 week for each of the Beatitudes, and we'll talk about how that all works. But that'll be on Sunday afternoons, 3 p.m., Sunday, August 21st. I think that's roughly around the weekend school starts. This study I want to do also mention is not Celebrate Recovery itself. It's a Bible study. But if you do come, it will give you a great overview of the principles of Celebrate Recovery.
I understand if you are hesitant to come to CR or even the Life's Healing Choices study. I get it. I've been there. It is scary. It's scary to let go of secrets, to trust, to wonder if you're being judged, to be afraid to fail again. But I have heard that fear and faith are defined the same way. I've heard fear described this way, that the things I cannot see will come true. Well, CR changed that perspective for me. So now I can say that faith is the things that I cannot see will come true. Wonderful, wonderful things have come true for me and for us.
We have set up in the lobby a Celebrate Recovery information table. We invite you to take a look at it as you leave today. We have something on there called issue sheets, and there's an issue sheet for pornography. There's one for overeating. There's one for chemical dependency, gambling, all kinds of different issues. I think there's like 30 of them or something. Some of them are just for men. Some of them for women. Some of them don't have a gender specified. So we invite you to browse at that. See how Celebrate Recovery can help you or maybe somebody that you know. Feel free to pick up one or more of those. And then all across the front of the table will be our general brochure about Celebrate Recovery and how we do that. And so drop by and browse. We'll stay close to the table, but right not at the table. So we're not going to bother you if you want to look at the table. But if you want to ask us some questions, come up and ask us. We'll be happy to share with you anything about our story, about the Celebrate Recovery Ministry, anything we can do to help you. Now, it's no secret to many of you that I am a big Texas Ranger baseball fan, as the rest of you should be, I might add. And my quest in life was to catch a ball at a Texas Ranger baseball game, and I was finally able to do that. And during my quest, though, to catch a foul ball at a Texas Ranger game, I typically noticed that there were three responses when a foul ball started coming to the stands. One of them is what I call the duck and run stance, okay? And you can literally see people as the ball's coming into stand, they are running away, okay? Or they're ducking and they're cowering. When I caught this ball, it was 15 years ago. My daughter was a teenager, and she had brought her boyfriend, and we were at the Texas Ranger game. And this ball was actually headed right for her boyfriend. And I am not in the duck and cover category. I reached over there and caught the ball. And my daughter and I were very excited, and we were celebrating. And then my daughter nudges me and points at her boyfriend. Well, he is in his seat cowering like this. And I do think that was the last time he went out with my daughter. So that's one category, the duck and run. The other one is a category of people I call catch and release. Now, I've seen this happen on TV, but I was actually at a Ranger game and saw it happen. And there was a guy who was sitting on the front row of the second deck right under the press boxes. And he had his daughter sitting in his lap. His daughter was probably about 3 or 4 years old. Somebody in that area caught a foul ball, saw her, walked over, and gave her the ball. And she just looked at it, smiled big, and then she threw it over the stands. And everybody was like, ah! And of course, you can't retrieve the ball or anything else. That was the end of that. Well, the third category, which I place myself squarely in, is what I call the fanatic. Those who run to the ball, willing to sacrifice life and limb, mine or yours, it doesn't matter, and we're going to get that ball. And then once you get it, you treasure it, you put it in a special case, you share it with other people, and you show it to other people. Well, I share all this because the invitation to follow Jesus is the exact same way. It's coming toward you. Which one of those three are you? Are you the duck and cover? Are you the one who catches it, looks at it, but throws it away when they go on with their life? Or are you going to be the fanatic who grabs it, loves it, shares it with everybody they can? I invite you to join us in the latter category. You'll never look back. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning, we make that available to you. Just come and sit in one of our front two pews. Talk to one of our elders. Come and talk to Angela and I. We're going to be here to help you in any way we can. But if you'd like to make this choice now, please do so right now as we stand and as we sing.